originating from our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios. This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
But it was all for Chuck McGee. Super Sabre wins the Derby for Todd Fletcher.
Basalt will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And Dialed In never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Now here's Mike Penna.
Tonight's guest here on Trainer Talk has horses in her DNA, and she has since birth. As a matter of fact, in second grade, she showed up at career day equipped with a copy of the Daily Racing Form and a clock. Yeah, this is going to be a really fun hour. Welcome to the program. Hello again, everyone. Good afternoon. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, coming to you from our Jimmy John's of Lexington broadcast studios. This is the show trainers listen to, Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. And I do want to extend a very special welcome to everyone across HRN Nation, including all of you who are listening throughout North America on Sirius 219, XM Channel 201, and all of you tuned in to our free live streaming or the archived podcast of the show. You are doing that through our website at horseracingradio.net. And really happy to have you with me for the course of the next hour as I welcome to the show 22-year-old Andy Biancone, a young lady looking to follow in the footsteps of her father, Patrick Biancone. Andy, welcome to the program. Happy to have you along for the ride.
Hi, thank you so much. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, okay. So second grade, you knew in the second grade that you wanted to be a horse trainer. That's remarkable.
Definitely. I got the bug early, I have to say.
And, you know, that's a bug. I talk about it a lot. Once it gets into your system, you don't get rid of it easily, do you?
Oh, no, not at all. I mean, I feel like I've been ditching class for as long as I remember to go to the track with my dad, and he would just let me, and my mom would get so mad, but you know, I guess it worked out.
Why did you know early on like that, when you showed up to career day with a racing form and a clock, how did you know that this is what you wanted to do so early in your life?
Well, I've always been a huge daddy's girl. My dad is, honestly, even to this day, he's my hero. I love him so much. He always puts his horses first. He always does right by them, and you know, that's just something I admired from a young age, and I've always loved the horses. You know, Saratoga Summers, and we were also, we obviously were at Santa Anita a lot of the time as well. So, I mean, I'd go to the, you know, my dad would pick me up from preschool, and we'd go straight to the barn, and I'd do barn chores, and, you know, so it's just really been, it's been a huge part of my life since I was a young kid, so.
Would you travel and make the circuit from track to track with your dad, or did you have to be stationary because you were in school?
I was stationary, yeah. So I grew up right in Arcadia, California, right across from Santa Anita. And, yeah, my dad actually moved out there and was kind of, like, stationary once I was older. And then he made the move to the East Coast, and I kind of followed him because I was like, this is what I want to do. So here I am.
So what did your classmates think when you showed up with a racing form and a clock?
I mean, I've always been the weird horse girl, so they were just like, oh, there goes the weird horse girl with her, you know, so it's fine. I'm used to it.
Could you read the racing form in second grade?
You know, definitely would try to highlight things, random things, but I read it as best as I could.
Yeah, and obviously it's been a passion, and it's something that you're following now all the way to the University of Florida, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, go Gators.
Yeah. Hey, be careful. Sorry, we're sitting here in Lexington, Kentucky right now, so I don't know if that's really a positive sentiment.
That's all right. You know.
So what are you doing at Florida now?
Well, I'm actually, I have one more year left, but I've decided to take a semester off just to kind of focus on the horses and help my dad out a little bit. They've actually got some pretty nice horses right now, so it was kind of difficult to go back to school. that have the consent of all my advisors and everything. So I'd like to return in the fall to finish. Yeah.
Yeah. Outside of course, your dad, you know, being a notable trainer and his success and following him, you know, growing up and watching his operation. Why a horse trainer, though, Andy? Why not something, you know, maybe on the business side of the industry?
Well, I mean, there's something about waking up every day and, you know, getting to see your horses develop, you know, just the way they come in, because they come onto the track when they're 2 years old and they're fat, hairy little babies, and then they run their first race or they have their first breeze and all of a sudden it just clicks and suddenly they understand what their purpose is, and to see them develop and grow into the athletes they're made to be is just, there's no better feeling than watching that transition and watching that development. And I think, you know, that's something I would really miss out on if I did something on the business side or even on like the veterinary side, because, you know, I have kind of toyed with the idea of becoming a vet. But going to the University of Florida actually definitely persuaded me. It really solidified my choice in wanting to pursue horse training. Yeah.
I can see that. And I've had so many trainers over the years on this program tell me that, you know, first of all, I think it's like this for almost everybody that's in this business and everybody that gets up early like you do and like your dad does. It's about the horse, first and foremost. That's what draws you to want to get up early every day, 365 days a year and, you know, 7 days a week. There's no days off. And you have to, first and foremost, love the horse, don't you?
Oh, definitely. I mean, it's absolutely a labor of love. This job would be impossible if you didn't love horses. You know what I mean? It's the most fulfilling job in the world. It's not work to me. It's my life. Like, ask anybody. I'm at the barn all day, like, you know, and does it take up a lot of my free time? Of course, but at the same time, I wouldn't want to be anywhere else. So it's all right. Fine by me.
What's your current role? I know you exercise some horses for your dad, but what's your current role in working with him?
So I'm his, I'm an exercise rider as well as his assistant. So I kind of just, I get on a couple horses in the morning and then I do more like assistant type jobs. Like I feed every day. And, you know, I go to the races and I saddle horses. My dad and I kind of have like a little rotation going on. So like if he doesn't go down, I go down. Like if he doesn't go down to Gulfstream, I go and we switch off. And I'm also his traveling assistant. So if he has to send a horse to Keeneland or Belmont or wherever, like I go with them and I'll be the groom, the hot walker, the exercise rider, everything.
Wow. Do you have any other siblings that are involved in the business?
Yes, I have a sister, and she hot walks. And then my eldest sister, Marie, she actually trained for a little bit, and she was my assistant when I was, like, 10, 12 years old. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So she decided to have a family and everything, and she moved to England. But, yeah, everybody's pretty, you know, involved in some way. I have a brother as well, but he's, like, not interested in horses at all.
Really, what happened to him?
He's a smart one. He was born with a brain.
I don't know. You sound pretty smart to me too, Andy. I think you've got your stuff together here. And definitely your priorities, at least in your head, are in line and you've got those goals set. Did you ever give any thought to being a jockey?
You know, I did, of course. You know, I feel like every person who rides horses at some point has been like, I want to be a jockey. But you know what? I just love ice cream, and I could never, I don't think, I mean, I'd probably have to cut a leg off to make that weight, honestly.
Yeah, it's a commitment, isn't it?
For sure, yeah. And, you know, same thing as, like, I don't know, also as I got more into training and everything, there's something so special about getting to develop a bond and watch a group of horses develop. And I feel like as a jockey, you kind of miss out on that because you're almost freelancing. You know, you're getting on a bunch of different horses. And unfortunately, you know, you kind of miss out on seeing that day-to-day development. And that's really, like, that's something that's really special to me. So, you know, even more so than the ice cream.
Yeah. You've brought that up a couple of times. And earlier you talked about, you know, seeing a horse as kind of like, and I'm paraphrasing, but kind of a pudgy little kid that develops into this big stud athlete, equine athlete. Do you have a couple of horses in mind that you remember started off as maybe a little bit, you know, gangly or pudgy, and then all of a sudden, bam, here's this beautiful horse a couple of years later?
Oh, my gosh. Definitely Diamond Oops. I mean, he's always been – the reason why, actually, we named him Diamond Oops is because his whole – my dad trained his whole family, his dam and his grandsire on the dam side, so, and his siblings. And I guess the owner, we named – that whole family has Diamond something in the name. And when he was born, he was such an ugly yearling. We couldn't even get rid of him. We got stuck with him. So we named him Diamond Oops because he was like the accident. He was like so ugly and gangly. I actually remember the first day he came to Palm Meadows. He came with a group of three other two-year-olds that we purchased at OBS. And so obviously they had come from the sales, and they were beautiful and shiny and muscular. And here came Oops. Gangly, long legs, big pot belly, hairy, and he was just screaming his head off. And I was like, Dad, what is this thing? Honestly, what is this? Like, and he's always been kind of a difficult horse. He's very naughty and playful, but as he's matured, he's actually become like one of the coolest, nicest horses to be around. You know, and just he takes his job so seriously, and the confidence he has is just, I mean, it blows me away. He's like not even a horse. He's a person to me. Like, he's my best friend. So just getting to develop that bond and watch him become the racehorse and the athlete he is today has just been amazing.
Yeah, and he's really developed into a top racehorse. What do you think was the one moment where he finally started to figure it out and put things all together?
You know, he's always been very competitive. His two-year-old season, we really had high hopes for him. We were derby dreaming when it came to him. And then he had his injury, and he was sidelined pretty much. I mean, we watched that horse be in the stall pretty much his whole three-year-old season. And coming back from that, I think he was still very immature, and he was still kind of being naughty and this and that. But as soon as we took him to Belmont, my dad sent me to Belmont with him. And honestly, I did not want to go to Belmont with him. My dad was like, Lindsay, we're going to send you to Belmont with Oops. I was like, great. He was like, and you have to ride him. I was like, oh, no. I was like, Dad, I'm scared to walk this horse. I don't want to ride him. Are you kidding me? And, like, this horse was going to the track with a lip cane and the pony every day. And only one guy could ride him, and it was just insane. And then I got him to Belmont, and the second I got on him, we just clicked right away. It was like, I don't know. I don't know if it's because I'm a girl and he's never had like a girl rider. I feel like girls are a little bit more like patient and whatever. But we just instantly clicked. And from then on, he's just been so mature. Like, everywhere we've traveled to, he's just been nothing but professional, and he absolutely loves it. So I think just the traveling and putting miles on him that way has really, you know, he thinks he's amazing. He literally, if he could talk, he would tell everyone, like, I'm the boss. And it's just amazing to see how his confidence has never wavered, like, since his injury or anything, and just awesome.
That was a pretty good impression of your dad there, too.
Oh, yeah, you have to. I have to.
Do you speak French?
No, absolutely not. No French here.
Really?
None at all, yeah. I speak Cantonese, but no French.
How did you learn that?
Well, my mom's Chinese, so we grew up speaking that to each other.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. No, that's pretty cool. That's pretty neat. Visiting
Thank
here
you.
On Trainer Talk, presented by Facey Tipton with Andy Biancone, the daughter of Patrick Biancone. And we'll talk more about being around his operation and what she has learned from her father and what she still has left to learn. Again, she's only 22 years old and just really kind of getting started with getting hands-on with this horse racing career. No doubt you're going to hear more from her up the road. Andy, so back to Diamond Oops for just a minute. How proud of him were you when he pulled off that victory in the Mr. Prospector there a few weeks ago?
Oh, my gosh. It was just, I mean, it was the best thing ever. And have my family there and everybody there was just so special. Literally every time he runs, I don't know why, but I cry hysterically, like ugly cry. And it's so embarrassing. I mean, even when he finished second in the Shadwell Turf Mile at Keeneland, I was just bawling my eyes out. Like, it's a good thing he didn't win because I would have just passed out.
Yeah, that's, you know, it's great when they run that well, but it's heartbreaking when they come up just a little bit short.
For sure. But, you know, just honestly, it is, it's more than the winning to me. Like, just to be around that horse every day and work with him is just, like, such a blessing to me. Like, I feel like the luckiest person.
Yeah, you said he responded to you maybe because of the fact that, you know, you're a female and he hadn't had a female exercise rider on him before. Can that make a difference for a horse?
Yeah, I think it really does. You know, he's a big horse. He's 17-1 and 1,200 pounds, and he's not mean. There's not a mean bone in that horse's body, but he's definitely a bully and he's testy. And I think he's kind of always had bigger guys riding him and trying to like muscle him down and whatever. But with me, like if he ever, I know when he's about to do something and I just like divert his attention or I talk to him and I tell him like, hey, like sit down, use your brain. And he literally listens. Like he knows exactly who I am and, you know, we're very close. So I think just having that relationship really, you know, really makes a difference.
Yeah, it's interesting. Is he pointing for the Pegasus World Cup?
As of right now, yes.
That would be great to see him strut his stuff on the big stage like that. And, you know, a big jump going from, you know, a race like the Mr. Prospector now stretching out and again and going back up to the Pegasus World Cup. But he's proven that he has plenty of quality in the past.
Definitely. I mean, he's a really versatile horse. And I think part of that is because he's just so intelligent. I mean, like I said, he's not even like a horse. He's like a person. And, of course, I think the distance concerns me a little bit. When he ran in the dirt mile at Breeders' Cup, he got a bit, I think, overwhelmed with the crowd, and he stumbled out of the gate really bad because he's not really used to having the crowd just, like, right there by the gate. But he's doing super well at the moment. Like, just, I mean, worked today on the turf and just blew me out of the water. So, you know, we got to take a shot. And it's, I guess, home field advantage. He loves Gulfstream Park.
Yeah,
so we'll see.
And that can make a big difference for a horse. I've talked to several trainers that tell me being in your own stall and not having to ship somewhere and go through that whole process can make a difference for a lot of horses. And it sounds like Diamond Oops is in the same ballpark there.
Yeah, well, we're at Palmetto, so we do have to ship to Gulfstream, but the track is extremely, like, the surface between Palmetto's and Gulfstream is so similar, and he's been to Gulfstream a million times, and he loves that fast track that they have there. So, you know, he's a little star.
Yeah, that's great. Well, good luck in the Pegasus if he indeed goes that direction here next week. I guess it would be January 25th.
Yes.
Of course, we're going to be there with exclusive radio coverage of the race here on the network. So we'll encourage people to make sure they're tuned in to that coverage on Saturday, January 25th. What are some of the things that you've learned from your dad recently since you really started getting involved in helping him hands-on?
Definitely. Attention to detail. Yeah, just I think one thing I respect so much about my dad is he's one of the most detailed oriented people I know, and it takes your work just to that next level, being able to time everything perfectly. And I feel like getting a horse ready for a race is almost like cooking. Like, you know, you got to turn the heat up, you got to turn the heat down, you got to add a little bit of this, you got to have a 2 minute like there, like you got to have a little like, you know, work from the gate here. It's like it's all ingredients to a final product to get them to peak on that race day. And, you know, that's the most difficult thing about horse training, but, you know, in a way it's an art. And you know, just that attention to detail and being able to read your horses and know your horses. I mean, one thing that I really respect about my dad is he knows his horses like he rides them himself, which is crazy because I don't think he's sat his butt on a horse in like 20 years or something like that. But he really understands them. So just, you know, knowing your horses and having that attention to detail and being able to bring them to peak on race day, that is just something that I'm still learning about, but I've been working hard at that.
Yeah, do you think you would know the horses as well as you do if you weren't getting on their backs in the mornings?
Honestly, at this point, it's hard to say. I feel like I wouldn't. Like, oops, I know him like the back of my hand. He's just like an extension of me. I feel like we're the same. Like, he sees me, he's like, that's my mom. I'm like, yeah, that's my animal. And, you know, we have that bond because we spend so much time traveling together and I get on him every day. And my dad, obviously, he's 67 years old and he's had like 50 years of horse training experience. So hopefully, you know, in the next couple years, I'll be able to just know all the horses as well as he does without having to get on them.
Yeah, I love your analogy, too. I've never had a trainer come on this show or any of the shows and put it in that fashion, that it's like, you know, preparing a recipe and putting all the ingredients together to get a horse ready for the races. And I think that's a really fair and an interesting way to look at it. Do you think if you were to go out on your own, Andy, say tomorrow, do you think you would be ready to put that recipe together and get a horse ready?
You know what? I would try my best. You never know until you try it, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It just sounds like you've learned so much from your dad. And I always wonder, you know, I've asked trainers this before, how do you know the time is right? How do you know you're ready to go out on your own? And most of the time, the answer is you just do it and you trust in everything that you've learned.
That makes sense. Yeah, I feel like you're never really, you can never truly be so ready. You know, I don't think there's ever going to be a time where I'm going to feel 200% ready, but you just have to take everything day by day and trust in your horse sense and trust in yourself and trust in what you've learned and, you know, just pray everything comes together. Everybody needs a little bit of luck in this game, so.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And visiting with Andy Biancone here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on HRRN. Again, the daughter of trainer Patrick Biancone and working as his assistant now. Do you plan on going back to school to finish up that degree at Florida?
You know, I would really love to. I feel like I busted my butt pretty hard to get in that school. I was never very studious in high school, and I had horrible grades. And then I moved to Florida, and, you know, I kind of had a tiny bit of that veterinary dream alive. So I went to Palm Beach State College, which is a community college in Lake Worth, and I worked for my dad full time and attended classes there for 2 years. And then I just figured I'd take a shot at college. I was like, you know what? Like, I've got my AA degree, might as well apply and see if I get in. And I got accepted, and I literally cried. I was so excited. So, you know, I would really love to return and finish it. Just because it is such a great university, and I did learn a lot being there. But at the same time, my dad's business is the most important thing to me right now, and our horses come before anything else. So, you know, school will always be there. People always tell me, like, horses are always going to be there, the track's always going to be there, but school's always going to be there too. So if it's meant to be, it will be.
Yeah, how about your dad? What does he say? Does he want you to go back and finish your education, or is he okay with you kind of doing an apprenticeship like this, if you will?
He told me, literally my second month of school, he was telling me to quit and come home.
Wow.
He was like, you don't need the school, only.
He wants you to learn the school of the race. You know, that's what Graham Motion always says, right? He went to the University of Jonathan Shepherd, and it's worked out pretty good for Graham Motion.
Yes, don't let school come in the way of your education, right?
Yeah, yeah. So outside of your Interesting. Outside of your father, who are some of the other trainers that you tend to keep an eye on and maybe study the way that they do things?
You know what? I definitely have a lot of respect for Barclay Tagg. I've been in his barn quite a bit, like when I've traveled, and I love the way he does things, and I feel like he's just such an amazing horseman, and, you know, he's somebody I really admire in this industry.
Yeah, and everybody has a little different style, too, don't they? I'm sure Barclay's style is a little bit different in some respects than your dad's.
Definitely, yeah. Everybody, you know, there's not one way to train a racehorse. There's not one way to cook a recipe. Like, there's a million different ways to do it. You just got to find what works for you. And, you know, every horse is different. That's, I think, one thing that a lot of people don't understand. It's like there's not one cookie-cutter method to produce a champion. You really have to know the individual horse and, you know, work with them to get them where they need to be. And they tell you, you know, they let you know. I'm not like with words, obviously, but,
yeah,
you know, just in the, if you know the horse, they'll tell you how they're feeling. And, you know, so you really just have to be aware of that.
Do you have to take a different approach when you're training fillies as opposed to male horses?
You know what? It depends. I kind of feel like you do in a way. I always thought I was someone who got along with fillies more, but as I'm getting older, I actually really like colts. I feel like fillies are so sensitive and they can go right or wrong very quick. Colts, I feel like you can kind of, you know, you can slow or you can give them a little more work, a little, you can train them a little harder, and they take it a little better. I mean, it honestly just depends on the individual horse, because at the end of the day, the more you train a good horse, the better they do. Like an Olympic athlete, the more you train them, the better they do. So,
yeah, how about a turf horse as opposed to a dirt horse?
That's interesting. I feel like, you know, you'd think dirt horses need to have a lot more fitness, but I don't know. Oops, like, Oops has just made me question everything I know, because he's a dirt horse, but he also can go two turns on the turf, but he only works on the turf. And, like, you know, so I think it's just you have to run the horses where they have the best chance of winning, you know, and it just all depends, truly. I mean, we have so many horses that we thought were, like, Sol Volante, for example. When my dad and I bought that horse at OBS, he told me, oh, this is going to be a turf horse. His pedigree is so European. His style, he looks like an old school, like, turf champion. Like, this is, like, truly a turf horse. And here we are. We're going to, you know, we'll probably run him into Sam Davis and, you know, hopefully go to the Kentucky Derby with him. So, you know, you just never know. You can't ever just look at a pedigree or whatever and say, oh, this is a dirt horse or a turf horse. You got to really test, you know, there's a lot of different elements into deciding where they fit the best.
Yeah, we're going to talk more about Sol Volante on the other side of this commercial break. Visiting with Andy Biancone here on this edition of Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. Stay with me. Going to be back with the second half of the show right after this. The Fasig Tipton Gulfstream Sale is hotter than ever. The nation's premier two-year-olds in training sale is now accepting nominations for the 2020 sale. In 2019, the sale recorded a record average, record median, and sold more horses for $1 million or more than any other two-year-old sale in North America, including a $3.65 million sale topper that was the most expensive two-year-old sold in North America since 2006. Nominate today, the Fasig Tipton Gulfstream Sale, April 1st, 2020, at Gulfstream Park. Where will you be?
Bloom Racing. Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pinhooking, and private race management.
Pulling away from Come Dancing, Mopetism, and the others, Midnight Bizou leaves no doubt today. She won the FIPS in hand.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now, get in on the action at bloomracing.com.
All
Banter Nation is unbeatable here at Oaklawn, and he stamps himself as a legitimate top horse in the country.
Alter Nation has what top breeders seek: physicality, race performance, pedigree. This most attractive son of distorted humor is out of a stakes-winning daughter of Seattle Slough and hails from a top Pin Oak family. Millionaire and graded stakes winner, Alter Nation won and placed in both starts at 2, then won graded stakes at 3 and 4. Alter Nation, standing at Pin Oak Stud.
This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Up front, African Heritage tries to go it all the way. Leads the way three parts of a length. Indy Ride cries for racing room toward the inside. Census gets started on the outside. Still right there is Storm Risk, and they're at the top of the stretch. African Heritage still the target. Census is next. Here's Sol Volante, unleashed by Panici down the center. And Sol Volante finishing up full of run out here. Big turn of speed from Sol Volante for Indy and Patrick Biancone to win going away. African Heritage was second. It's close for third. Census or Indy Ride?
Pete Aiello with the call. That maiden win for Sol Volante. You just heard my special guest, Andy Biancone, reference him before we went to the commercial break. Going to talk more about Sol Volante and what he has meant not only to the Biancone operation, but to Andy personally. Do that right after I welcome everybody back and remind you that if you did miss any portion of this program, all you have to do is head back to our website. That's horseracingradio.net. You can check out the podcast at your leisure. You can also do that on Apple Podcasts. Head over there and search Horse Racing Radio Network and listen to all of our programs whenever you have the time. And, of course, we'll encourage you to follow us on social media at HRRN on Twitter and Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook and Instagram. Well, Sol Volante, that big win in his maiden race, he would come back and win his next start too, and then finish third last time out in the Mucho Macho Man, but an effort that will set him up to be on the road to the Kentucky Derby. And back now with Andy Biancone, who listed as one of the owners of Sol Volante, and that had to be a special win for you.
Oh my gosh. Words can't describe how amazing it feels to be part of a horse like that. I can't believe it.
All right, so you hear that race call coming back from the commercial break. It takes you back to Gulfstream Park West when he broke his maiden. What was that day like? Put me there with you.
Honestly, I wasn't even there because I was at Keeneland with Oops and a couple other horses that we had running. And I remember watching the race on my phone. And, in my head, because this horse, he was always a little bit immature, a little bit, before we gelded him, he was almost like untrainable. He was very anxious and really, you could barely walk him. He was crazy. And then once we gelded him, he just became a completely different horse. But even coming to that race, he was still a little bit immature. And I kind of thought he needed a race. I was like, this will be good. Just finish second or third, maybe, like hit the board. I'll be happy with that. And I was watching my phone. I was just in absolute, my jaw dropped. I mean, I was screaming, jumping up and down. I mean, I couldn't believe it, especially because this is the first horse who I've actually had a part of an ownership in. And seeing, like, my silks that my dad and I designed together, like, you know, him wearing these silks, it was just so special. I couldn't even believe it. It was unreal.
Tell me about that, because I read that in the article after the race. You designed the silks with your father?
Yes. Yep. So they're basically, it's a light blue body with yellow seams and midnight blue sleeves and a black cap with a little, like, tassel thingy. And they're the same silks as my dad, but I just added the midnight blue sleeves. So it was just really special to sit down and do that with him. I remember I was, like, debating a couple different things, and he helped me pick. So it was, it's a moment I'll never forget.
You said you get emotional when Diamond Oops runs. How about Sol Volante? Do you get just as emotional?
Oh, yeah. Like, weak in the knees. Like, I feel like I need a bag. Like, I'm the worst person at the races, honestly. Like, and I'm so lucky because Diamond Oops and Sol Volante, they're really sweet horses. Like, at the bottom of it, you could go in their stall and lay down with them, and they're just lovers. So, and they're both pretty, like, calm, cool horses, very confident. And there's me just like crumbling and blubbering, and they're just like, can you just stop? Like, just stop for a minute. Like, it's hilarious.
Yeah, you know, as somebody who has been on a horse twice in their life, and both of those were trail rides for me, and it scared the daylights out of me both times, you got to put me in the saddle with you. When you get a leg up in the morning and you're exercising a horse like Diamond Oops or like Sol Volante, what's that feel like? How do you put it into words? Can you do it?
It's just, it's amazing. I mean, the thing about horses like that is you can feel the quality when you're riding them. I mean, it's like, you know, when you drive a Camry or you drive a Maserati, like, you can immediately feel the difference, and it's the same exact thing. Like, when I'm galloping Oops, I feel like I catch other horses, like, so quickly, and he's not even accelerating. Or just you feel the sheer strength that they have, and just, you know, you feel like you're sitting on something nice. It's a really powerful feeling.
Is there more pressure, and I don't even know if that's the right word, Andy, but is there more pressure when you're aboard a horse that's top quality, stakes caliber? You mentioned maybe Sol Volante going down the road to the Kentucky Derby now. Do you feel a little more pressure when you're exercising them in the mornings?
You know, Oops, I feel like I know him like the back of my hand, and so I mean... You just have to trust them. Like, you have to trust the horses. That's one thing my dad has always really instilled in me, is you can't doubt yourself. If you go in saying, like, oh, I'm going to get run off with, like, you will. But if you go in, like, oh, this is my buddy. Like, we're cool. We're tight. Like, we get it. Like, there's that mutual respect. And they can read your mind. I know that sounds crazy, but they literally, horses can feel your vibe. So it's important to give them a good vibe.
Talking with Andy Biancone here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Andy, your dad has saddled nearly 400 winners in North America alone. He has numerous winners internationally as well. He's won prestigious races like the Arc de Triomphe, and then, you know, graded stakes races, countless graded stakes races here in the United States. Are there other horses beside a horse like Diamond Oops that, when you think back on the horses that you've been around, even when you were a little kid, that kind of stand out to you and hold a special place in your heart?
Oh, definitely. I mean, Lionheart and Assisi Empre and Gorilla, like, those horses were part of my childhood. You know, just super special. Even like even Diamond Bachelor was a really special horse to me. I don't know if you know that horse. He won a couple stakes races like in Del Mar, and then he was on the Breeders' Cup Trail and he ran in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Dirt. And I don't know, he's always just been a really cool horse. He was, like, always a challenge, and I love watching my dad train a challenging horse because he just really really picks their brains and finds what they like and, you know, what they don't, and it's awesome.
How do you pick a horse's brain?
You know, it's hard to explain. You just kind of, I mean, it's like, it's just kind of a feeling you get. I don't know. We had one filly named Lasta, who I absolutely just adored. I mean, I remember she actually sold to Shimakobe Farm this at the Keeneland sale, so she's going to be a brood mare now. But I remember I just bawled my eyes out to get over saying goodbye to her. But I remember she was, like, the most nervous filly ever, and just, you know, would weave in the stall, would be crazy on the track. And I just, one day I was galloping her and realized, like, oh, she really likes to be covered up by other horses. And she would just drop the bit and totally chill as soon as you covered her up. And that's how we trained today. And then we taught her, you know, breathing, pull her out, and she'd kick home. And we'd ran her the same way, and she won a couple sticks like that. So super awesome seeing, like, a horse who was like a problem horse come, and you just find a situation they like and then train them properly, and then they rise to the occasion. It's like the best feeling ever.
Yeah, I can remember you mentioned the name Gorilla, and that was a horse that I can remember back in the mid-2000s, right? That was so tough. That was the same time as what you had, Silver Cup and Aussie Siempre, and
oh, yeah,
those horses were Lady of Venice, right? That was about that same year.
Yes.
Yeah, what were those years like? Those had to be special to be around your dad's operation when you really had it rolling with those types of horses.
Oh, definitely. I mean, at that age, I was just running around feeding them Teddy Grahams. So, but nonetheless, definitely had a special bond with them. And I still remember to this day flying out to watch Gorilla run the Beverly D and seeing her dead last at the top of the stretch, and all of our hearts just sank, like, oh, no. And then out of nowhere, Julian just pulled it out of the bag, and they just stole that race. And it was like going from 0 to 100 on the happiness scale. Even as like an 8 or 9 year old, I was just so, you know, moments like that, that hooks you onto horse racing. You know, you just live for that feeling.
Yeah, your dad has had a long-standing relationship with Julian Leperu, who was one of the top jockeys in the game. How about you as a kid? You mentioned Julian's name. Were you around him quite often?
Oh, definitely, yeah. Julian is, like, part of our family. I've known him he's like an older brother to me. I've known him for as long as I can remember. It's just crazy to see him. I remember him being this super nerdy, like, he had dorky kid, like, glasses, and he just, like, carried the bucket at the races. And to see, you know, how well he's doing now, like, he's just one of the most confident, cool guys. And it's awesome just to see a transition like that in somebody.
Yeah, it's pretty special.
He's so down to earth. He's one of the best people in the game.
Yeah, really, really good rider, and, you know, maybe a better person than a rider. And I think that's the ultimate compliment you can pay to any of those individuals, any individual really, but certainly a guy like Julian fits the bill. Your dad, Andy, has gone through some tough times too. He has had instances where folks have come out and accused him of using substances that are banned and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, that was a darker time period when he started going through all of those. And I know that the stuff in Hong Kong, you weren't born yet, but the stuff at Keeneland, when all of that came out, how difficult was that for you and for the family?
Oh, it was really hard on our family. I mean, that was probably the worst time in our lives. And I think even just watching him struggle, like, to come back, that was probably even harder. It was super hard as a kid to see my dad like that. And he's somebody who, you know, the horses are everything to him, and just not having that for a year, that's just, I mean, I couldn't even imagine myself right now. Like, if I wasn't allowed to be at the barn for a year, I wasn't here for a year, I couldn't imagine. And I don't know, I just respect my dad so much because he is one of the most determined, persistent people. And just the way he has rebuilt his operation is just, like, blows my mind. You know, he is someone who genuinely loves his horses. He would take a bullet for any of his horses, like, hands down. If we have one that's sick, it doesn't matter if it's the best one in the barn. It doesn't matter if it's Diamond Oops or if it's a claimer. Like, he's there until 10 o'clock at night, and he's 67 years old. And he's just, that is something I've always admired about him. And he never gives up. A horse could be so challenging, even if they're a cheap horse, and he lives to figure them out. He lives to pick their brain, and, you know, he loves that. So that's just something that I hope I can be half the horseman he is one day.
Yeah, great words, and I'm sure your dad would be more than thrilled to hear those. How you mentioned his determination and the perseverance that he showed in a very difficult time. How was he able to get through that year in the I guess it was about 2007 when all that happened. How was he able to get through and then move on and move past all of that?
I think I would admit it, but I feel like part of it did it for me. Like, just, you know, we have that bond together and with the horses, and I think that kind of helped keep him going. Also, you know, cigarettes and poker. He's a fan of those.
Yeah. Yeah, and sorry, we lost Andy there for just a quick second, but talking about, I guess you were talking about your dad's love of the horses was one of the key factors in getting through that period?
Yes, of course. Love of the horses and, you know, our relationship together, how tight we are because of our horses. And Cigarettes and poker. Yeah.
Yeah. Cigarettes and hey, you got to have something, right? Cigarettes
exactly.
And poker will work. All right. So right before all that happened in 2003, in 2004, and in 2005, he goes to the Kentucky Derby, and you mentioned Lionheart. He nearly wins it in 2004. Just you talked about the heartbreak of coming up just short. His first one was Brancusi, who finished 16th in 2003, and then in 2005 mm-hmm. it was Spanish Chestnut, who was 16th mm-hmm. that year as well. Do you remember those Derby experiences pretty vividly?
You know, Lionheart, I actually watched from the TV. My parents I was in kindergarten, I think, so my parents just left me. But, you know, nonetheless, it was a very special horse. I was there when he won the Haskell, and when it was pouring rain, and we celebrated, and, oh, you know, he was just, I think Lionheart has to be one of my dad's all-time favorite horses, even more so probably than All Along, because of how difficult he was to be around and train. I mean, the horse literally couldn't breathe if his life depended on it, and was very anxious and aggressive. And my dad literally had to pay the outriders at Saratoga to let him train the horse the wrong way, because that's the only way the horse would relax. You know, that's the only way he wouldn't run off, is if he was training to it right. And, you know, I think that's another thing I love about my dad, is he would literally do anything for his horses. He would go out of his way, do the craziest stuff, make the most ridiculous requests, but it always works out, and he's always right. Like, I hate to admit that sometimes, but he is really right.
Yeah, if I walk into your dad's house, what types of horse racing memorabilia am I going to find?
You know, you'd be surprised. We're pretty cool. We kind of has like a bachelor pad type of thing going on, like no food in the fridge kind of deal. But we do have a huge picture of Lionheart winning the Hollywood Security. Yeah. So here, that is a really special horse to him. He's got like Lionheart plastered everywhere.
Yeah. No All Along pictures?
Not so much. He said All Along was a champion and amazing, and, you know, he'll always love her, but she wasn't challenging enough for him, I suppose. She was a very, you know, compliant, nice horse. It just, you know, was good at the end of the day no matter what. But, like, Lionheart would be a horse that without my dad wouldn't have amounted to the horse he was.
How about for you? If I walk into your home, what kind of things am I going to see? Are there pictures and different memorabilia scattered around?
Oh, yeah. Diamond Oops, saddle towels everywhere. he actually, his... Diamond Oops, his sister, Patriotic Diamond, was a horse that I learned to gallop on. So I've got some of her saddle towels as well. She ran in the Princess Rooney, which is like the sister race of Smile. So I have both of their saddle towels like hung up. And of course, you know, pictures of my dad and I. I love my dad so much. He's, as much as we fight, as much as we disagree sometimes, I just really love the relationship we have, and I love our operation and what we've built together.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because I've told this story many times on different shows, that I worked with my dad too in the family business, and eventually ended up having to go separate directions in terms of what I did for a career, and that's worked out pretty well, so I'm thankful for that. But we were almost too much alike, where we were butting heads all the time, and there were plenty of arguments involved. So is that a normal thing? You know, with working with your family, working with your father?
I think so. I mean, you know, I'm pretty opinionated, and so is he. So we definitely butt heads. And he's also just, like, crazy. Like, I remember it was, like, we were expecting, this was really recently, we were, like, expecting a hurricane here in Florida, and we had three horses that were going to ship to Kentucky Downs. And he was like, whoop, can't trust the planes. Get your ass on the van. Like, you're going. I was like, what, really? And I literally just got on the van and had a 17-hour van ride. Literally had to pee in a cup in the dark in stop-and-go traffic 8 times. And it was, like, hurricaning on my face, like, as I was, like, sleeping on a bale of hay, like, for the first, like, 4 hours of the 17-hour trip. And just stuff like that. I'm just like, Dad, really? Like, why? Like, or when I went to Saratoga with Diamond Dukes and Kelsey's Cross, I had no help. It was literally me. I was like hot walking, grooming, galloping, and I was like the worst groom ever. Like, literally was finishing at like 12:30 every day for two horses. It was so embarrassing. Like, and you know, and he's very like, my dad is crazy about time. Like, this is going to sound really ridiculous, but Oops has a pee schedule. Like, he walks for 20 minutes and then he pees exactly 20 minutes after he stops walking, and then walks for another 15 minutes. And he has to be on that peeing schedule, because if he doesn't, he'll tie up before he goes to, like, when he comes back from the track and all that. He has to be on the schedule. So.
Wow.
Yep. It's super detail oriented.
Yeah, I've never heard that before, but you know, I've heard some bizarre things with horses, and they can be very particular. And that's the first time I've heard about a horse being on a pee schedule, though.
Yep, that is just, you know, what we're dealing with.
Yeah, and you said every horse is different. Every horse is an individual. Are there other horses that you've come across that have little peculiarities like that?
Oh, definitely. I mean, I think all the, like, the good horses, the good athletes, they're like, you know, they have extra personality. It's what makes them good. It's what makes them different, because they know, you know, they know who they are. They walk around like they're the star. And you have to just kind of, as their handler, as their exercise rider, as a groom, like, whatever, you kind of have to just, you know, kind of cater to their needs in that particular way.
Yeah, it's one of the unique traits of being a thoroughbred horse trainer and knowing those horses and figuring out the right buttons to push. I guess it's like being a coach, right? You have to figure out the right buttons to push for your athletes to get the most out of them.
Exactly, except these can't tell you exactly what's going on. So
yeah.
You have to be a coach and a sidekick.
Yeah, talking with Andy Biancone here on Trainer Talk presented by Fasic Tipton. So what's the ultimate goal for Andy Biancone? Do you want to eventually get out on your own and take a go at this?
That is the ultimate goal. I've had that goal since I was in the second grade, and I plan to achieve it. You know, I would go out on my own. I don't think I'd ever want to have more than 50 horses. Honestly, even just 30 would be great. You know, like I said, I love being able to see that individual development within my horses every day. And that's something that's, you know, really important to me. And I'd like to, you know, my dad has really instilled in me the importance of, like, knowing every individual horse. And that's something that I value a lot. So I'd want just like a small string, and, you know, winning any race is special. So just as long as I could win any race, I'd be really excited.
Do you think you would still get on the horses in the mornings if you were the head trainer?
I think so. I would like to. My dad says it's impossible. He's like, there's no way. You have to just be able to watch them. But there's something special about getting on, you know, or at least getting to get on some of them and, you know, knowing their quirks. So I think I'd like to at least be able to get on all my horses a little bit, even if I wasn't riding them every day, just to, like, you know, see how they're doing. I feel like there is something you can feel, like, when you ride them, and it's like an advantage of just watching them.
Yeah, so much about being a horse trainer too is the other side of it, the business side, because you are running your own business. How much time have
Yes.
you spent picking your dad's brain there and trying to learn how he handles the business side?
Oh, a lot. Like, we're always sitting in the office together, and he's really good about that, just making sure I understand, like, the business side. And that's one of the reasons actually why he got me involved in Sol Volante, because he was like, you need to learn how much this costs. Like, this is not, like, you think you make so much money, but you really don't. Like, I mean, as a half owner owning 50% of Sol Volante, he's won a $42,000 maiden, a $75,000 stake, and finished third in the Mucho Macho Man. And so far I've only seen like $5,000.
Yeah.
The rest has gone to expenses, and, you know, you have to invest to make a return. But and this has been a good investment, but, you know, I'm so appreciative that he lets me be so hands-on, and he, you know, he's not afraid to, like, put me in, like, oh, here, me part, like, here, co-own this horse and see how much it costs. Like, I'm really grateful just for that.
Yeah, great teaching tool. Andy Biancone on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. About ready to wrap things up. Only a couple minutes left, Andy. And I always enjoy asking trainers to tell me a little something about themselves that maybe we haven't talked about yet, maybe outside of horse racing. What other hobbies or interests do you have?
Definitely napping. Napping is a big one. I could nap forever. Ask anybody. Like the biggest grandma. Also, let's see. Yeah, napping. I love cooking as well. I know I did that analogy, and it rings true. I love cooking. It's a definite passion of mine. I think if I wasn't pursuing horses, I would definitely pursue something in food or in, you know, something like that.
Really? What's your favorite thing to cook?
I make this almond tart that is actually galette de rois. I don't know if that's probably a horrible pronunciation. Like I said, zero French here. But it's a French, like, almond pastry, and it's amazing.
Almond tart, is that right?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, we were breaking up there for a second. I wanted to make sure I had it right, so when I come down to Florida next week, I can look you up and say, hey, where's my almond tart?
Perfect. We'll do that. I owe you one.
Yeah, it's hard, too, because trainers don't often get much time away from the barn, so it's hard to find time for those types of things. How do you have a regular life and still make sure you're taking care of the horses the way you're supposed to?
You know, I feel like there's always in life, there's a triangle. It's like sleep, work, social life, and you can only pick two at a time. So, you know, if I need to pay a little extra attention to my phone, then I kind of sleep kind of lax, but then I get back on my sleep work grind and then just have to have really patient friends.
Now, we'll encourage people to follow you on social media. I know I started following you on Twitter, so it's at Andy, A-N-D-I-E, underscore Biancone, at Andy underscore Biancone is the way you can keep up with her and her career, because she's off to a great start learning from her father, and no doubt she'll have a lot of success when she finally decides to go out on her own. Andy, listen, can't thank you enough for the visit here. It's been a lot of fun to hear your story, and all the best moving forward. Good luck.
Thank you so much, Mike. Means the world.
All right. Andy Biancone here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Yeah, fun stuff. And you can tell she has a passion and enthusiasm. And if you're going to be successful in any sport, any industry, you have to have that. She has it in spades. Andy Biancone here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. My thanks to her for visiting with me here tonight. My thanks to our producer, Lee Delapina, here in our Jimmy Johns of Lexington studios. And my thanks to all of you for tuning in to this edition of Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. I'm Mike Penna. We'll talk to you next time here on HRN.